stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.
Don't just take our word for it. The New York Times said, anyone who ever suffered that Chinese torture known as American television owes it to himself to see the groove tube.
what we just heard there was a trailer from the 1974 movie Groove Tube, which at the time was one of the highest grossing independent films of that era. And, of course, you have tuned into another episode of
Comedy History 101,
where we school you in comedy. I, of course, am Harmon Leon, and with me, as always, Scott Kalanico. Scott, how are you?
I'm grooving, Harmon. Tube grooving.
Grooving and tubing? Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, in 1974, you know how they would describe the movie, the type of humor in the movie Groove Tube?
No, Harmon, tell me.
It would be the edgy comedy. Yeah, exactly. The edgy
it's
comedy.
It's counterculture.
It's the counterculture thing. And so, what was your, first of all, what's your initial take on the first viewing of Groove Tube? Because I think maybe we share the same sort of Rotten Tomato rating of the movie.
Yeah, well, I mean, I remember seeing it, you know, back when, you know, when cable first kind of came out. And this was, you know, that was probably 79 or 80 or so. And this is one of the movies that you could kind of see on cable back in the day. So it was kind of like the comedy staple. So I remember watching it as a kid, so it was interesting to go back and rewatch the film and kind of compare that to some of my memories and what was funny and what wasn't.
When you watched it as a kid, did you think it was the edgy comedy?
And that was also, you know, when Saturday Night Live was still pretty new, so it was all pretty, the whole thing was pretty edgy, you know.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because this is a part of a series of three podcasts we're doing on the road to Saturday Night Live of, you know, kind of the movies that influenced what later became, you know, the first season of Saturday Night Live, because the Groove Tube, well, in the billing it says it stars Chevy Chase, but in reality he's just a bit player in it, but I think they were just capitalizing on his success of Saturday Night Live, which came out in 1975. This movie came out in 1974, yeah. So I think for like it's like VHS tape release,
yeah,
they put like Chevy Chase was the star when he's pretty much, I don't know, is he pretty much just only like in one scene?
I'm looking over a four-leaf clover that I overlooked before.
He's in a couple. He's in like two different scenes, and his fingers are in a scene.
Yeah, his fingers hump other fingers.
Exactly.
Yeah, so again, my take on it was, whoa, that movie didn't date well.
No, that was my very first thing. It was like, this is not entertaining. You know, I think we both kind of had similar trouble in actually trying to finish it.
I believe my message to you was the amount of times it made me laugh equals zero.
Yeah, that was some of these other movies in the series. I actually kind of laughed at some of the other ones. But this one, there was not much. No, same here.
But very interesting, the more I dug into the history of Groove Tube, the more I have a newfound respect of its origins, how it came about. And first of all, you just have to look at the era. It was 1974. I think they started filming the movie in 1972. Besides, it was written and produced by a man named Ken Shapiro. Do you know his other creds? Here's an interesting thing. He was a child actor on the Milton Berle Show.
Yeah, he was kind of... and apparently, I was reading something else. Apparently, his grandfather had done pretty well. And grandfather was the person who kind of helped stake him to the... Channel One Theater in New York. But Ken went on to kind of work with Chevy Chase again in the film Modern Problems from 19. 19-
yeah, was he the director of Modern Problems, or was he the writer of it?
He was the director. I think he co-wrote it as well. But, you know, basically the two films were The Groove Tube and then Modern Problems.
Yeah, and then he was a that's what I read. His grandfather was really wealthy and bought him, a 1972, or it was probably earlier, like in the 60s, because we'll dive into the history of how The Groove came about, which actually started in the 60s, kind of like an early video camera. So that was bought, his grandfather bought it for him. So that's kind of what got him into, starting to make videos, which eventually led to the movie The Groove Tube.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the movie is basically like a best of, like a collection of some of their best skits that they went back and then filmed in 35mm, which I actually think that, like you said, the whole thing is it was a phenomenon at the time, because what they would do is they would license it out. So basically you'd have a theater, and then they would, like, there wasn't anything live. It was all people watching stuff on TV. They would have different rooms where you could sit on couches and stuff. And then what they did is they started licensing this out to colleges, which is actually pretty smart when you think about it, because they wouldn't have to go there. All they would have to do is have a TV with a video equipment, which, you know, back then colleges would have that stuff. And then that was it.
Yeah, so just to back up a bit, it's like it started as, it's called the Channel One Theater, which started in the Lower East Side, I believe 62 East 4th Street, which is really ironic because I run a monthly show right down, a couple doors down from where the theater was. So, like, I've seen that theater a zillion times. And so from what I read from the reviews was they would have three different video monitors or TV screens or whatever set up in the theater, and it would be kind of like an immersion theater experience where, you know, you would just watch these kind of like an art project in a way. You know, you would just watch these kind of trailers or for fictional TV shows.
Yeah, they'd watch trailers, and then they had, you know, news parodies and children's TV show parodies and all that stuff.
Yeah, tons of commercials. And again, we're talking about The Road to Saturday Night Live, which, you know, all that became a staple for Saturday Night Live. And, of course, you know, rightfully so, because, you know, Chevy Chase was a performer/writer for the Channel One Theater and also appeared in Groove Tube. But I think what you have to do is really kind of the sense of humor. And in this series of podcasts, we're going to cover movies similar to this, like Tunnel Vision, which also had Chevy Chase in it, and Kentucky Fried Movie, which was directed by John Landis, and the Zucker brothers wrote it. This was like the first generation that, like, grew up on television. So, like, one review called it, you know, the Howdy Doody generation, you know, gets their own theater show or something like that. So it was, like, kind of post-hippie, post-Watergate, you know, the coming of comedians who are coming of age out of the TV generation, the first generation to actually have grown up on watching television.
Yeah, I mean, I think of, because a lot of these reviews refer to it as an off-Broadway show, and I think it's losing the charm, or probably the setting of it is when you're watching it, you know, on TV, you're like a badly dubbed copy off YouTube. It's not quite the same thing, you know, when you were sitting in a room full of people watching this on a black and white TV. Apparently in some of the theaters they would have fridges, you know, refrigerators set up so you could get munchies. So it was like you were pretending like you were watching a real TV channel, you know, and I think that loses it, because that's what they talk about in those reviews. Like, you were going on about the reviews. Do you want to read any of some of the quotes from those?
Now hippies can tune in, turn on their own TV.
Yeah,
that kind of stuff.
But, like, you know, but like, even the, like, New York Times was raving about it, and San Francisco Chronicle's raving about it, and it's just kind of weird reading those reviews, and then when you watch the movie, you're like, okay, this isn't quite the same thing.
Yeah, but again, that's why it hasn't aged well. You know, again, it's like back... I mean, if you think about like the humor of the 60s, this is like very humor of the 70s. Like the 60s, you know, the big shows were like Laugh-In and Smothers Brothers and Monty Python. But those shows didn't really parody the medium.
Yeah, well...
I mean, don't you agree?
I do, but I think, what you know, of course, they didn't know this. And I would just say watching all of these in succession, it's just like... But it's also like a bad comedian as well. It's like, dude, you can't, like, don't. Yeah, you go up and you make a joke about a commercial that everybody will get. Yeah, you're going to get a big laugh, and it'll be popular for about a year or two until everybody forgets that commercial that you're referencing. Yeah. So. If you're gonna make a joke out of a commercial or something like that, it's just gonna get lost after a while, and which is I think what's going on.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just saying. I think that's what's going on a lot in the GrooveTube. Like for example, that there's that one commercial. Like the first kind of commercial parody that was in there was like for I don't even know what I think the joke was that it was mouthwash and toothpaste in one.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that one?
In From the Groove Tube?
That's the one we're talking about now.
Yeah, yeah. I just watched it two nights ago. I mean, but some of it I kind of tuned out a bit.
But do you remember
that?
But
yeah, I think I do. And then there's some couple making out or something.
But it's just like, I don't know what the funny part of it. I mean, I guess maybe their joke was that you would actually have mouthwash and toothpaste together in one?
Now, for the first time, toothpaste and mouthwash together in Mouth Appeal, the first mouthwash toothpaste that also removes superficial tobacco and food stains to make your teeth look whiter, plus mouthwash for fresher breath. If you want to get closer, kissably closer, get Mouth Appeal, the toothpaste that gets you closer.
Well, maybe it was like a specific commercial of the day that they were... parodying
maybe.
That is just lost in time.
But
that's like that's the thing about doing pop culture references in your comedy.
Yeah.
It's not going to date well.
No, well, I mean, there,
if the reference is lost.
There's a commercial where basically Chevy Chase is on there and he's lip syncing to a real commercial of the day. Which again, here's another thing that's lost. So. In the reviews, they actually mentioned that, but like none of them mentioned that this mouthwash thing was based on a real commercial. And it was just like, what the hell was that?
Yeah, there was. I think it was part of the theater experience because I mean, it's not like when I started reading like the movie, I go, God, that didn't date well. I guess that's what they laughed at back in the day. But then when I read about the theater show, I go, oh, that seems kind of cool, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that seemed really cool. And you're like, okay, I can understand why it was popular and stuff. And then, like I said, I think that loses some of it when they go out and they film it in this nice 35mm. And then, you know, then it's like that, the mm-hmm. Coco the Clown, which I could imagine that being funny, you know, especially like if you'd never seen anything like that. Remember the clown? There's a bit in there where it's a clown.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like kind of based on the old Soupy Sales thing where he's like, oh, go into your parents' wallets and send me all that paper, you know, something like this where the clown... For those of you who haven't seen the show, the clown's going, send all your...
You know what? That's the beauty of drop-in clip
okay,
here.
Yeah.
Oh, boys and girls, I hope you enjoyed singing that song as much as I did. And after a workout like that, Coco feels real tired. Whew. And you know what I need for quick energy, don't you, boys and girls? That's right. I need my milk.
But yeah, that was a reference to that. And then... Okay, I can see how that could be kind of funny, but I think it loses it when you're watching it on this 35mm, you know, nicely filmed thing, as opposed to, like, seeing that on a TV, which I think would be...
But was it nicely filmed? It looked pretty low budget.
Well, I mean, dude,
I mean the budget for the movie was $35,000.
No, it was
$350,000.
They shot it in 35. I read a couple of things where they shot it in 30, which is, you know, that's what professional movies are shot on. And some of it look probably maybe not the stuff that they did like for the mm-hmm. dealers when they had to do stuff in the car and things like that. But I remember reading somewhere that was shot in 35, the Coco the Clown parts, and it was just like I just don't think that thing that kind of loses it.
Yeah, so you just had to have that layer over it of, you know, not gloss to kind of add to the humor.
I mean, it was like the other one, like while we're on, I mean, that whole first thing, that first skit, the first long skit, the dealers, about the two drug dealers, that was just like...
Yeah. So first, just to back up a bit, the dealers, it starred... I don't know. Have we mentioned that Richard Belzer was part of this?
Comedian Richard Belzer. Is like what was his breakthrough role, more or less.
Yeah, and he actually became part of the theater group by answering an ad in the Village Voice.
Oh, wow. Okay. Nice.
Yeah, so he wasn't like a buddy. He just simply saw an ad and auditioned for it, which is kind of, you know, that's how it happens. And this pretty much, you know, I mean, he was a stand-up at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you know, it helped to launch his career.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Didn't hurt.
Yeah, it didn't hurt. And then I tried to find out how Chevy Chase got involved, but you know, maybe it was just the same. He answered, you know, an ad, or I'm not sure if he was friends with Ken Shapiro. And the weird part is, like, none of the reviews of the show, the live show, even mention Chevy Chase.
They don't. No, that's all they talk about to Ken, and then the co-writer of the show. What was his name? Lane Sorensen. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's check out his background. Last thing he wrote was not necessarily the election.
Okay. All right. Well,
not necessarily the news.
Apparently, I was reading.
He worked on the Chevy Chase show.
Yeah, and
the 1977 special.
Oh wow! And apparently, Ken Shapiro, the director, would write for the Oscars a lot. Apparently. I was reading some of these comments.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people went on to do other things. In fact, another nod to Saturday Night Live was there was a news segment, and the news segment, it was like kind of a news satire that ended with the signature line, "Good night and have a pleasant tomorrow," which was later used by Chevy Chase on Weekend Update on Saturday Night Live, which became like his signature, you know, sign off.
And that's the way it is, was, and will be. And this is Robert Elgin for Channel One News, hoping that your news is good news. Good night, and have a pleasant tomorrow. No matter what the news may be, this time or any time, until next time, have a good time all the time.
Yeah, what's interesting is that in between all... between this one and then the other two that we'll talk about, Tunnel Vision and also Kentucky Fried Movie, they all have news parodies of them.
Yeah, again, you know, these are all comedians coming of age, you know, out of the TV generation. And, you know, again, it's like kind of a signature of 70s comedy, which, you know, if we look at, you know, what's coming up now, you know, comedians like raised the smartphone generation. Mm-hmm. What is that comedy going to be like?
Yeah, after when
you know when all you know is just you've always had a smartphone.
Yeah, and we're just beaming bits into each other's heads. Well, we'll be making jokes about smartphones.
Yeah, so you know a lot of Tinder jokes, like you already hear, you know that sort of thing. Like, oh, swipe left. So again, this the group tube though was the feature film debut of both Chevy Chase and Richard Belzer.
All right, yeah, that's good. Apparently, he did a sequel later on, the Groove Tube 2, but I don't know if that was a show or a.
That was a live show. So I read a review about that. It played up in Harvard, and I think they had a different format. I think it was like, the theater would be sort of like a living room. Mm-hmm. I think maybe similar, or you might have moved to different rooms to see like, you know, the different bits.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it was interesting. I mean, you had to put yourself into the mindset of back in the day. One of the other little trivia bits that we missed was the do you remember the hitchhiker? The film opens with a hitchhiker catching a ride with a beautiful woman, and then the woman.
Yeah. So we can go through some of these sketches. Go ahead, tell them about that bit.
Well, it's just the woman entices him and then leads him on a chase through the woods, leading to a conclusion where he runs afoul of the law. But the person who appears as the hitchhiker is a gentleman by the name of Buzzy Linhart, who actually was one of Bette Midler's songwriters.
Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah. Okay. So there might have been the comedy connection is Bette Midler would, when Bud Freeman, as we know from our comedy history episode on the improv, would play piano at Bud Freeman's improv. So maybe there was like some sort of connection, you know, through that.
Yeah, I'm sure it was all, you know, that was back in the day. So late 60s, early 70s when New York, Manhattan's all run down. It was easy to get a theater in the village.
Yeah, in the village. What, Cafe Weirdo, yeah, or whatever. What was that from? Mean Streets, yeah, and then, or something. Cafe Bizarro.
Yeah, and then hanging out with the Ramones and CBGBs. And...
No, this is pre-Ramones. So this is like the, I think the group tube, the stage show started
in the late 60s.
Maybe like 1968, yeah. 69. Yeah. And then they started filming this 72. Mm-hmm. So Ramones to be.
Yeah, Ramones. Well, they were rehearsing.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about some of the edgy bits. So I think one of them, so the movie originally got an X, can you believe it, it actually originally got an X rating.
Yeah. I'm wondering if we saw, if the clip that we saw was the X or was it?
Yeah, because then they later released, when Kentucky Fried Movie came out in 1977, they released it, re-released it as a double bill and re-edited it down to a PG mm-hmm. sort of format. But there's one is a public service announcement warning about venereal disease, and there's like a long shot, and you think it's like a talking puppet, but it's actually a penis dressed up in people clothes.
And now, a message from your Department of Health.
Hello, my name is Safety Sam, and I'm here to spread the word about a health problem of great importance to us all. Did you know that VD, venereal disease, has reached epidemic proportions in our city? Well, you should know the facts about this public menace in order to protect yourself and those you love.
Yeah, and it was kind of hard to figure out that it was a penis for a long time.
Yeah, so that might have helped the X-ray.
Yeah, okay, that was probably it, yeah.
Yeah, and then this, and along with Tunnel Vision, there's they both parody like evil corporations.
Yeah, that was interesting about that. And this, it was the
even in Kentucky Fried Movie they did that. That was like the opening.
Yeah, there's another one.
Kentucky
Fried
Movie.
There's that one. So this one's Uranus, and then I can't remember the other. Yeah, that was interesting how they go into that. Yeah, I mean, I just like to talk about the dealer sketch, because that was, I mean, like, the rest of it was, I think even now, it was, you know, because things were, like, you know, pretty quick. Like, even the, I liked the cooking show takeoff, where they were making the Heritage Loaf. That was, you know, mildly amusing.
Welcome to the Cramp TV Kitchen. Tonight we are featuring a festive holiday dish, which is a traditional favorite in Newark and sure to delight your entire family. 4th of July, Heritage Loaf. Begin by coating the inside of a large shallow casserole dish with Cramp Easy Lube brand vegetable shortening and place in your refrigerator to cool.
Yeah, I mean, for that, it was... I see that like as a stage, something would be funny on stage, but like on film, it just didn't... It was just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it was.
They're just making things bad.
Yeah, again, it was too long. It was too long. But that Dealers, I think, takes the cake, where it was the intro. A lot of people. So basically, if you'll insert clip here, if you'll drop in the clip of the Dealers.
Like the whole clip, because that goes up for like about 25
minutes.
Not
the whole clip.
That's what first made me fall asleep the first time I watched
it. It's kind of okay for a couple minutes, and then it's just like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, I don't know. It was kind of like a Cheech and Chong type. Like, I think it's just like, you know, it's the 70s, and like our audience is all stoned.
I know, but
so they're gonna be like, you know,
I mean, you brought up.
How counterculture.
But you brought up Cheech and Chong, which is the great example, because that is still funny, though, because it's like kind of that classic, you know, to reference our other episodes about the straight man. You know, that's a classic, you mm-hmm. know, straight guy, you know, funny guy combination. You know, so yeah. They're still funny. You know, when you watch right. it, you know, even though they have a lot of drug humor in there, but I mean, this is just not.
Yeah, I don't even. It's so. I just don't. It's kind of forgettable. Other than I remember it just went on way too long.
They
had to eat a lot of weed.
Yeah, that was it. It was like they stole weed from someone, and then people stole it back, and then they thought that another classic bit all the way up through Super Troopers, where it's like the guys think the cops are after them, so they eat all the drugs.
Yeah, that's a good bit, and maybe that was like even a homage to this.
Yeah, I mean, but then it just never kind of went anywhere and just wasn't. I mean, they had a cool little bit of animation in there. I really did like the animation.
Yeah, that was kind of around the time of that animated movie Heavy Metal. And I wrote down the note, looks like Yellow Submarine.
Yeah, it was totally going for that old Yellow Submarine kind of look, yeah.
And that was, who was that, Peter Max?
Well, it was kind of Peter Max influence. I think it was all kind of a ripoff, you know. Heavy Metal actually didn't come until, I think it was 82. So that's, you know, you're talking about 10 years after this.
Oh, right, yeah. But Heavy Metal first started as a magazine. Yeah, I think it was
as the magazine,
published by the same publishers as National Lampoon, maybe. Possibly. I don't know. Write us a letter.
Yeah, if we're wrong. We should do another.
and subscribe on iTunes.
And then we'll have a whole episode about Heavy Metal magazine.
Yeah, there you go. So any other takeaways on the history of GrooveTube and Channel One Theater?
No, I mean, I think I would have liked to have seen the stage show, and I would like to have seen less of the GrooveTube. I mean, like, I don't think it holds up well. And I think we kind of both in agreement on that.
Yeah. So my takeaway, again, I think, you know, I could totally see how this led to, you know, the humor of Saturday Night Live, not only because in style, but also, you know, it kind of like nurtured, you know, a young Chevy Chase in both performance and writing for the show. So, and also Richard Belzer. So, you know, it has that place in comedy history. It's just didn't date too well because, again, it's like it's not post-Vietnam and post-Watergate and post-hippie. You know, it's not all those facts. And it's not the first generation to, you know, grow up on TV where, you know, TV was considered the idiot box where, you know, I haven't even had a TV since 2011. Yeah. So it's just like, and it's different, you know, we're not bombarded with commercials because, you know, we watch for the most part, you know, things, you know, off the internet and there's no commercials. So, you know, I think, you know, back in the day when there was only like three networks, you know, there was just, you're limited, everyone was watching the same thing,
right, yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah, that same thing people were echoing. You know, and like you said, it was people who grew up with the medium reflecting back on what they'd learned. So, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting little time capsule that I don't think holds up well.
Yeah, I mean, but it's like, you know, it's the first generation to actually, you know, comment on the medium. I mean, it's like there was, you know, there was TV and commercial parodies, you know, even in like Monty Python, would, you know, somewhat, but it didn't become the whole centerpiece of what they were doing, where like Saturday Night Live was largely, you know, a large part of that was, you know, parodying TV shows and commercials.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
like
it's
that.
A lot of the same. It's talk shows. It's talk shows. It's game shows. It's, you know, news. It's, yeah, there's a lot in common there.
And with that, I think we conclude the history of the GrooveTube, which, you know what that means, Scott?
The GrooveTube?
No, it means, since we wrapped up the topic of today's episode, it means it's time to plug away. Scott, what do you have to plug?
Oh, well, Harmon, not much, really. Well, of course, there's always much, and that is the new episodes of This Is the President going up at wordsoverchair.com and also at iTunes, Google Play, Last.fm, wherever you find your favorite podcasts. We're actually doing these once a week now, so stop by, listen to me and Harmon go on about the current political situation, and we'll have plenty to say about the midterms, so tune in.
tune in, tune out. Yeah, and what I have to plug away actually ties into the Channel One Theater, which became the stomping ground of GrooveTube. Week from Thursday on November 15th, I'm having my regular monthly show, Tale Storytelling, which is actually our six-year anniversary, and it takes place just a few doors down for where the Channel One Theater put on their shows. So stop on down to Tale Show. And before we go, we actually have some listener mail. Is this the right place to drop it in? Should it come earlier?
No, this is fine.
Yeah, okay. So we have one Kevin Mayer who had a comment about our last episode on Tune On. He says, listening to your podcast about Turn On. I wonder if ABC Wednesday Night Movie that aired and was supposedly terrible was the Oscar. Harlan Ellison wrote the script and it tanked his screenwriting career. Well, Kevin, to answer your question, yes, it was.
And yes, it did.
But thanks for writing in. And if you want to write in and be like Kevin and have your comment read on the air, be sure to do so at our website, wordsoverchair.com, where you can find all the episodes of Comedy History 101. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes. Leave a comment. It doesn't hurt. And with that, thanks a lot for tuning in. And we'll be back next week with the history of Tunnel Vision, which came out in, I believe, 1976, which is also a predecessor to really influencing early Saturday Night Live. And with that, thanks a lot, and bye-bye.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.